Attention, citizens! It's time for Super Pulp Science!
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. I'm here with my long-suffering co-hosts, Justin Curry, known the world over as Chasing Artwork. You may have recently bought one of his NFTs. It's not really his. We're also here with Dan Vaderbanker, our producer extraordinaire, who's helped me adjust the microphone cable so I don't get static today.
Hi.
Thanks for having us, guys.
I'm Dan. He's Justin.
I'm Justin. He's Dan.
Gregory. Just a couple of guys.
It's just a couple of guys.
I'm Gregory Kavichuk, and we are on our first show back from a show. Too many uses of the noun show. The show I meant the first time was our podcast, this show, Super Pulp Science. The other show I meant was the Winnipeg Comic Con, my first convention in 2 years, more than 2 years, at least 2 years. And man, what are your first thoughts? Both of you attended.
Yeah. First thoughts. It was great. It was a great show. I was super happy with my booth and setup. I brought enough of everything, which is always great for like a local show. You can bring more than you need. I always feel a little disappointed myself if I sell out of something at a local show. It was great to see so many familiar faces again, like so many people who had been, you know, just waiting for a local convention came by. And like financial wise, it was one of my best Winnipeg shows ever, which was kind of crazy because it was one of the smaller conventions.
Yeah, Winnipeg Comic Con decided that they would have a show, a small show, to test how it was. And talking with the show organizers, thanks again, Steph. They weren't sure. They were sort of taking a gamble also, and they were very pleasantly surprised with the number of people who were willing to comply with vaccination requirements and arrive and attend a show. Now, Justin's being a little bit modest also, because you also presented and sold a mountain of Dragon Nannies.
I think actually, yeah, that was the one thing that I didn't, that I'd like to talk about was how, yeah, my heart was filled by the amount of Dragon Nannies and new art books that I sold from the table. I was super, super happy with how that book did. I think a big part of it was I had three tables and about four different places on those three tables. I had a Dragon Nanny poster, I had a canvas, I had the 3D printed toy, and I had just the books everywhere. So it was very hard to look at my table without seeing Dragon Nanny two or three times.
Yeah, it was, and it sells itself, honestly, when you open it up. It just,
and it's shiny. It has a shiny foil cover, which definitely stands out.
Like a fishing lure? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes. Oh, I heard a great, something I learned at Comic-Con, which I thought was great. A couple of people came over, and they saw my foil prints, and they saw a Dragon Nanny with a foil cover, and they made these crow references. I'm a crow when I see something shiny I like or something. Oh. It was like this,
yeah, right.
they had like the same
term. Yeah, the
term
raven
over.
Will chase
no,
the
no.
coins.
So apparently there's this online meme story that I was not privy to. Friends of mine came by on Saturday and were going around the convention and came back to my table and asked, what is going on with this crow with the knife?
Oh, I've seen that everywhere too.
Yeah, and I
this
didn't
is evidence
understand.
Of advanced years, gentlemen, that we're not, we don't have the finger on the pulse of the memeing now.
So I didn't understand, but they said at several tables there are these little crows that are holding knives, and like they wanted to know if I knew the story. What is this? Why does everybody have this? And I mentioned that, yeah, all these people are making these shiny crow references at my table too. What am I missing? And so I sent them back out there to like find out what was going on. So they went to a
your
table
mission,
and
should you choose to accept it,
bought an enamel pin and got the story. And apparently in Vancouver a while ago, there was a murder that included a knife on the street, and while the police were taping things off and like securing the scene, a crow flew in and grabbed the bloody murder weapon and started trotting off with it, and the police had to chase it down, and it became this online viral meme of this crow that stole a murder
weapon.
I mean,
it immediately writes itself as a story of a witch commits a murder, sends their
familiar
to collect the murder weapon. Oh, my goodness.
And this is just a legend in Vancouver. Like, I had never heard of this. You guys say you've seen it. So, but I think that's probably because you have those friends in those circles, right?
Go ahead. My son wants to intern up with a PSA.
Not all witches are evil.
All right. Here we go.
He's been raised right to know that the horrible representation of witchcraft in popular culture is a function of the Christian ideology and not actual historical events. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Was the enamel pin, did it say a phrase on it?
No, it was just a cute little crow with a big knife in its beak.
Oh, okay. So I have a different one. It's so weird you mentioned that. Crows, yeah, it must be a crow thing because there's a guy, it was right behind your table, Greg, right around the corner, so kind of facing the wall on that other side. And I'm blanking. I was looking through for his card because I took his card, but it must be at home. So I'll insert his name here. Effin' Birds. See, I'm willing to do it for them. Yeah.
That's so hurtful that you won't do it when I ask you to do those inserts.
But anyway, he's a very nice guy, and he was sold out of his book. All he had was French versions left, so that's always a good sign.
Oh, Effin' Birds.
Effin' Birds.
Effin' Birds. Yeah, I talked to Effin' Birds.
Okay.
What a great guy.
Yes.
Bought some of my books for the plane ride. Yeah, we had a nice chat about how mine doesn't have hardly any swearing in it.
And his has a lot.
Yeah.
And the phrase on my pin, he had one left, so I grabbed it. And that was the only thing I could buy from him was a pin at this point. But it was, pardon my language, I am a goddamned delight, which I love. I love that phrase. So I love it. And it's also a magnet, which is cool. It's like one of those things that has a magnet that it doesn't pin. It's just a magnet on the other side of your shirt. So it just pulls, stays on that
way. Not to be worn over your pacemaker, though.
Right.
Yes.
Thank God I don't have one of those.
All right. Well, speaking of selling books, you were excited about the Automatic Age and the very first time you got to sell it in person.
And I will say this, that I had prepped greatly 2 years ago to really put this book on the market. And so I was really nervous that maybe the gusto had left me as I was working on the follow-up. Sometimes you divorce yourself from a book a little bit as you move on. And so I'd broken up with it a little bit and, you know, had to dust off some of my thoughts about the book. But the first time someone picked it up and said, ooh, what's this? It all came rushing back to me. I felt that proud father, book father feeling. And it was, like Justin, I also put it everywhere on my table set up, and I had a new banner made for it. So you basically, if you approach the table, you couldn't miss that it existed now. And interestingly, it had a very low price point compared to my other books because it's a smaller black and white soft cover. And so there was this interesting thing for me where my regular readers would show up. Ooh, this is your new book. How much is it? Oh, it's $15. That's it? Oh my gosh. They'd immediately look around the table to show some like legitimate financial form of support. Like, that's not enough. I've been waiting for so long. I want to buy
that's
something
else.
That's
the cheapest book you've ever made at your table?
That's probably, yes.
And people wanted to spend more. They wanted to spend more. That's great.
And I had, I have a few other books of that page count and that content sort of value. So I bundled sort of three of those books for $40. And immediately people are like, well, I'll take all three. And some of my regular customers I happen to know had those books. So I would caution them. I'm like, no, you have this one. This one isn't new. I just displayed them together because they're the same price point. That's fine. I'm going to give them as gifts this year, right? There was a real drive from the people who've been waiting and supporting and showing up to come back and show that support again. And so I gave my art book, the art book from a previous episode, which Dan will not insert, but you can find it.
It's like three episodes ago.
No, actually, it's the one that is up already. It's the one that I just finished editing.
See,
but I haven't posted yet.
Episode. See next episode.
No.
See
the one before this one.
Yeah.
Where I gave to those people who showed up and then were like, oh, no, I want to show my support. So then they would sort of upsell themselves. So then I inserted the art book kind of into the, and they're like, oh, I didn't pay for this. And I said, you have many times over paid for this. Here's a tangible thank you. And to the one person who looked me in the eye and then the little mist appeared in your eyes and then the little mist appeared in my eyes, I'm sad that we didn't just hug and cry it out. So if you're listening to this, I felt it too, man. So right there with you.
Dad, it's really neat. Where did you get this?
Some little junk store in Chinatown.
I'd also like to do a shout out to somebody I had an interaction with at the Comic-Con. Wasn't as touching, though. Somebody came up, and it was a younger gentleman, and he was there with some of his friends, and he started asking how many prints I sold at a Comic-Con. And then how many, like, of this one, how many do you print of that one? How many do you sell of that one? And immediately the hackles kind of went up because I thought in, like, a turnaround way, he was basically asking, how much money do you make?
Right.
And
I'd rather you just ask that question.
What? Sorry?
That's an easier, question to ask.
Right. Yeah.
But, like, he was asking all these questions about how much stuff I bring to Comic-Cons. And so I was getting a little short with him. And then he said, because I'm thinking of doing a convention, I don't know how much I need to print. And so immediately I felt like a bit of a dick. And I was like, oh, okay, here we have this podcast. We talk about it. So if you're listening, sir, I'm sorry if I was a bit abrupt originally. But then I explained our whole idea of, like, when you have a new piece, you're doing a convention, you're early on, you print enough to pay for, like, if that new piece you're going to sell for $15, print $15 worth of printing of it. So if you can sell one, you print for that, print like that whole
try to get formula. In the black in one sale and make it, yeah. Make
I feel
the
like
rest.
He had more questions, but he was maybe think like he felt the...
He felt that you were being a dick.
Maybe. So I apologize. I misread that situation. And if you have any more questions, please do reach out.
Okay, what a great moment then to ask and to share a little bit about. If you have questions about the business practices at a convention with a person who is a writer or an illustrator or a filmmaker, any of those things, what do you guys feel is an appropriate line of questioning that would not get your hackles up? How could that person have...
Well, I would lead with it first.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking of doing this. How do you... Like, that's the first question. So maybe
then
that's,
I'm they all forgot warm that and fuzzy.
Step. Yeah. And you have to kind of let them know up front what you're trying to do, because that seems... If you don't tell them... Then I don't blame Justin for that reaction.
I just kind of threw me off. It was like kind of out of left field. It was what he started with was, how many prints do you sell here?
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
He was like, excuse me?
Yeah. Who are you and why are you asking this question? Why should I share this information with you? Yeah. You thought maybe he was a representative of your ex-wife? Justin is not previously married.
I do not have an ex-wife.
I don't get that reference.
You don't get that reference?
Well, I have an ex-wife, but I don't get that reference.
No, it's it. I guess because I'm the child that grew up where all of my 80s friends are children of divorce.
Oh, okay.
And alimony jokes were like just normal.
Right.
I guess I'm part of an ancient past.
That's true.
Civilization. That's right.
That's right.
My son points out an ancient civilization.
So the
Gregory,
80s.
You were also in the... So this was a much reduced, probably about a third the size of the floor plan that we're used to at this show.
Yes.
And you were not in Artist Alley. You
no.
were placed... quite a ways away from Artist Alley in a different spot.
My first thought was, am I being punished for something?
Okay.
So what happened is I opened up my email and it's like, thank you for participating in the show. Here's the show floor plan. Here's the exhibitor package, which is pretty standard for a show. There's a little link that shows you the overall floor map and then your number. And I was looking at it and I was like, well, this is very strange. My first thought was like, yes, I'm right by the entrance. My second thought was, wait, I'm not in Artist Alley at all. And like sells with like often. So you want to be grouped with people who are looking for the similar things because they're more likely to be predisposed to your stuff. And because I have a big art print setup, I find it useful to me to be in Artist Alley, even though at least half my business is in books themselves. But they put me as sort of the anchor point, the end cap of their author row, which once I got that information, didn't seem bad at all.
Interesting. Author Alley.
Yeah. Hmm. They put an author
Is that
alley
something
together.
That happens at other cons?
Well, I've seen it. They do it at New York Comic Con. It's not as great to be in Author Alley if you have art prints at New York Comic Con.
They do group them at like the Edmonton kind of had like a row, and they do sometimes. What do you, like, how do you feel about that when they group like artists with like artists? And
if because this show was smaller footprint, I had no problem with it at all. People were going to walk the whole show to see the whole thing. You're not going to miss anything. It was just this little dog leg of an area. I mean, it's quite a large space for COVID reasons, but a small number of vendors overall. So people were going to see the whole show. So I had no trouble with it. If this was a standard Calgary show or the regular Winnipeg show, I would have immediately asked to be repositioned to Artist Alley because I would be in the destination zone. People looking for only books, if they can only hit Artist Alley or Author Alley, they're going to hit one or the other if they're pressed for time. And I'd rather be in the art print zone. And I talked to the organizers at the end of that. They said, how did you like being here in Author Alley? And I said, I actually really liked it because I got to connect with all my peers here in Winnipeg. But I think it should be closer to Artist Alley if I'm going to be in it together. Like, if I'm going to be placed this way again, I'd rather be in Artist Alley if they're going to be separated.
And maybe let me know what's right. going on in the meantime.
Yeah.
little shout out saying, hey, you know, are we going to put you in this thing called Author Alley, you know?
Well, to be fair, when they asked what your most recent publications are, I sent them a list of books.
Right. And the Automatic Age was up there.
Right. So it's a very, if you've got 50 of these things to organize today, at first glance, I'm an author.
Sure. Did you know you were also billed as a guest on the website?
I did, yes. They comped me a table.
Okay.
And they gave me a special pass. And I actually made sure that I kept the sign for one very specific reason. I have a big, it's about 30 inches by maybe 25 inches. And it says, GMB Kimichuk, featured guest. And I kept it at the end of show because Justin didn't get one.
You were not a featured guest.
I was not a featured guest. No.
And well, one thing I noticed though, some of those other featured guests that were not necessarily artists, like had stuff to. I think they were there more for autograph reasons. Were along kind of the other far wall near the other guest alley, like where the actual like film stars are and stuff like that.
The original suggestion was that's where I would go.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
But then I said I've already booked this much space and I have a big setup, and they said, well, then we'll comp you the equivalent of one table, which is what the featured guests would get in your space.
But you would have been closer to Artist Alley on that side.
If I had done that, yeah. But I wouldn't have had as much space.
Something to think about for next year.
That's right, yeah.
I often wonder sometimes, because I always sign up as early as possible for shows, I'm never, like, guests are usually not coming to the show and the convention reaches out to get them there.
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted to be an artist guest, would I...
Remember that show where we both had huge setups and only one of us had to pay for it because you signed up later and I signed up earlier? So I paid my invoice.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. So it happens sometimes where the early bird, if a show is sort of organized badly, right, ends up paying for every other worm that shows up.
Goddamn farm TV.
Now. I told you we should have got a Zenith.
Speaking of badly organized shows, how well was this one organized compared to past? And I mean, it's no secret to anybody who listens to this podcast, and we haven't, not that we've complained about it, but people who've been in Winnipeg along the scene know that the last round of big cons wasn't the best organized.
Yeah, we've said, I think publicly on this podcast, that Justin and I enjoy the home show because we can bring everything and we can sort of do our own thing. And it doesn't matter how well or poorly organized the home show is, we can...
It's never really
rain.
Affected us.
Yeah. But
right. Anyway. But
I thought that was true until this show, which was very well organized.
Oh, yeah.
Very smoothly
run. I could
run.
Tell. Just walking in there, yeah. I could tell. It was like a well-oiled machine. That place, there's nobody running around freaking out about anything.
No.
That was a first.
A few of my old students were volunteers at the show, so I got the straight goods from them. I said, you know, what's it like? They volunteered for the last show. They volunteered for this show to help out. I said, what's it like? And I'll edit what they didn't edit saying. Mr. C, it's great. There's no effing drama at all. I can't effing believe it. There's just no drama. So shout out to the organizers of the New Winnipeg Comic Show.
Still not as good drama as Icon. Free. I mean, we didn't have a group of volunteers rush our car, grab all our stuff,
that's
and plop
true.
It on our table.
We're
they
talking
set the
about
bar really high, show. Though, those guys. Like
those
they,
guys, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And by the way, that when I did cruise through Artist Alley, there's going to be no shortage of anime themed art at Icon because there was a lot
Tons.
Out there. There was
There's
so much anime.
A bunch of new artists.
Yes,
Russia,
yes.
Too.
That was
like
really
look over your
artists.
Shoulder, Justin. You're
yeah.
Doomed.
Yes.
Yeah. Me and Drake had lunch the Monday after, and we were scroll like he had like taken pictures of a bunch of new artists that he found, and we were blown. Like, where have these guys been? They've been like hiding.
Drake of Quirkalicious, not of Canadian music fame.
Not of
yeah.
I was just having lunch with Drake. I'm just gonna take that and isolate that clip and drop it, and
that's right.
We'll get lots of listens that way.
Yes, yeah, so much talent incubated over the last couple of years.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And that's when the people I was able to speak to, and I wasn't able to speak to everybody I saw because they were, if I saw someone that I knew and you were busy, I'm not going to, you know, walk in. Although I did do that to you once. Inadvertently, I did interrupt you and some of your customers.
You somehow interrupted three different people. It was great. Dan came in, said hi, and stepped to the side and got in front of somebody else, and then stepped to the side and got in front of somebody else. Like, he...
It was just, I could not get, like, there's so many people crowding around your booth. Anyway.
It looked like sabotage.
Yeah, so anyway, but I was trying, to be respectful and let everyone, you know, talk, and everyone was busy and stuff, but it was great to see that everybody had lots of new work, it appeared, that they'd been busy over the pandemic.
Yeah,
so,
and not
a lot of graphic designers, too.
Yeah.
A lot of graphic designers.
I know.
Mm-hmm. It's in the culture, I tell you, at Red River. It's in the culture there.
Yeah, so watch out,
sorry.
Justin, because they're
like
coming.
Partially my fault.
Credit
and
for
your
that.
Credit, too. Your yeah. credit, yes.
I tell everybody, you want to make it as an artist, take that program,
yeah.
graphic design.
But then you come in and you talk to them while they're in the program.
Yes.
And they see how successful you are, and then they want to do that. So, yeah.
So you're making your own downfall. It's like every Roman emperor before you, right, accidentally inspired their own assassination, right?
I
can't wait to watch it. When are the Ides of March?
I want to say, though, about the organization, I did walk around the whole con and look at the programming area and that kind of stuff. And, yeah, it was smaller. I don't think they had, like, a gaming area or anything like that. I don't think that would have been good in COVID.
Mm-hmm. No,
so that makes sense. But the programming, they had this down in the York Ballroom, a nice, massive ballroom. There was a good crowd there for John Delancey. I watched the John Delancey panel. He was having a great time. And I will add that I went to a John Delancey panel the last time he was here, few years back, and it was not as nearly as good. So right. just even comparing direct John Delancey panels, you know,
apples to apples, cues to cues.
Exactly. That is, and it is so much better this time around. So excellent job by everybody at the Winnipeg Comic Con, and I'm looking forward to next year. And so, and what I'm saying, trying to say, is that this con knows how to do it right, and you guys have like, you've been to Montreal, right? They've done Montreal,
they
and
do
Ottawa.
Ottawa and Montreal. I don't think it's necessarily like all the same team. Like usually,
no, but the same organization who has hired these people, and you know what I mean.
Like,
it's, you know, the culture kind of moves down through the organization. So
yeah,
I think
just
that,
like the Fan Expo, the core team, right, goes to wherever their
right.
show is.
Yeah. Anyway, great job, everybody. And it's going to be bigger and better next year. I know it will be. Mm-hmm. Like, I can just feel it.
But
so.
Did it make you really, really excited about FanQuest?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now I have to get my ass moving on that because now I have no excuse.
I talked up FanQuest a lot
to
a lot of people.
And thanks a lot because now I have to do it. No, I'm going to do it. I just was like, when I got there, it was, first of all, way busier than I expected it to be. I went there, like, I showed up. I was there with you guys on Friday. Then I came back late Sunday afternoon, and I thought that would be like winding down time. It usually is at FanQuest, but at the smaller con. But this one, it was very busy. People were like moving through there, lots of people. And I'm like, that's just great. And apparently it was even busier on Saturday.
Yeah. Saturday was nonstop. Yeah.
So
it was. And I thought, of course, the inevitable bottlenecks of checking, you know, QR codes.
Oh, that was not. If you got a weekend pass, that was they only checked me once.
Right.
Once I got my wristband on, I don't have to be checked again, right?
Right.
Yeah, that was very smooth.
Yeah, they did run it very well. And I, just all around, really enjoyed it. It was also interesting. I had my niece came to help me. It was her first time ever coming to a comic show. So when she first arrived, and I'll suggest this to anyone who has first-time helpers, I just said to Signe for the first half hour of the show, you're no good to me here if you've never been to a show. Go walk around for a half an hour, right? Go walk around for half an hour and feel what this is like and figure out how you can be an ambassador to this, because that's who you'll be at my table, right? So learn where this stuff, and I said, pick a few things that you really like and know where they are on the map. Because when you get back, somebody else who mentions that thing, you'll be, you know, and in Signe's case, she was really looking for a specific Funko, right? So I was like, find where the Funkos are so that when someone says, have you seen those? You'll be the one that can point the way.
Mm-hmm.
I did not discourage her from...
Yeah, I was going to say you
I'm not going to shame anyone who's collecting anything if their heart is in it, right?
That's
She'll
fair.
Learn that mistake, the Funko mistake. She'll learn that on her own.
I've come around to Funkos a little bit in the past year and a half. I've got some Funkos. They're dollar store Funkos, but they're still Funkos.
You've changed, Dan.
Whatever, man. They're $4 each.
You've changed. And just reminding her that, you know, as an ambassador to the show, know a little bit about it, right?
Oh, yeah.
See where things are and whatever. And she was a wonderful helper and just did exactly that. People were like, oh, I'm looking for this. Oh, I don't know where the ATMs are. Oh, you know, and then even though it was her first time show, she knew where those essential things were.
Mm-hmm.
People always need their cash refreshed and their bladder emptied. So be able to point those out to regular attendees. Did you have any surprises at your table? Any
I had some students. Like, I taught a figure drawing class to a class of grade 11s during the lockdown, and one of the students came up, and she had her sketchbook. Like, after the class, I mailed them all Chasing Artwork sketchbooks, and she had that mostly filled out and put her cosplay that she was wearing. She had, like, planned it all out in the sketchbook, so I got to, like, look at the blueprints and then see the end result. It was pretty magical. I had some people from back in like the Lair of Your Manitou area who had came in to the convention and say hi, and that was really, really cool. I was struck a couple times about, because it was local and because I brought everything, I had like so many things at my booth, and I found myself fantasizing about, like, what if I just had 20 prints and like 2 books?
Right,
instead
like
of
a laser
100
focus.
Different designs.
We've
and
talked about this before.
Yeah.
And up until this past weekend, I was leaning 100% in that direction. Streamlined, more focused. But I also brought everything. I had a very, you know, like we joked in the last episode that you could land a dirigible in my space. Mm-hmm. And it actually was to huge benefit for the local show, because it was a lot of people picking up a thing they'd passed on at a previous show.
Right.
Oh, you do have this still. Oh, this is still here. Oh, I should have picked this up last time. I sold a number of large format pieces of art, canvases, framed pieces, posters, stuff that people had that are usually I bring as part of my display at a local show, and that usually doesn't. It's usually not something where I think, oh, I'm going to bring this because it will sell. I bring it because it's eye-catching at a distance, and then it'll bring people to the closer thing.
Day of the Triffids.
Day of the Triffids.
Mm-hmm. Which I bought.
Right. So this time around, all of those big display items were the first things to go. I kept having to reassemble my display because, oh, this, I want this canvas. Oh, I want that. I want that. I want that. And I was right in the first 20 minutes of Signe's return explaining, like, all these big things, they're fairly high ticket items. People will ask about them, but they will not buy them. It's okay because I have smaller prints, or these pieces appear in these books. So, like, how
it's important
them.
To point out, you need, it's a great idea to have those big ticket items.
Right.
Even if there's a very little chance somebody's going to pick them up, nothing is going to sell the smaller, more affordable version than
right.
having a big original.
How much is paint. That? It's $300. How much is this print? It's $20, right? People can decide between original art and what. But in this show, it was such a mixed bag of what people were getting and taking and selecting, and I would never have been able to guess.
So you would have been very disappointed had you honed it down to a limited portfolio.
I guess I wouldn't have known.
You wouldn't have known.
Right?
But, yeah.
But it'll be interesting because I think we do have, obviously we won't have the benefit of the amount of space we had at this show, say at a show like FanQuest. So maybe focusing down and being more laser focused on those specific items.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 new. Now can I have one?
Because during the event, I've been really fine-tuning my website, my online store. And that's, I'm so much more proud of it than I used to be. Like, I used to, like, it was, yeah, it kind of had to be forced out of me where you could buy my stuff online because I didn't like the whole process. But now that I've gotten
I know that feeling.
Much better at it, like, I like the idea of having, you know, there are 200 pieces of my artwork available, 150 of them are available online, and only 50 of them I bring to shows, kind of the newest,
right.
You know. So having some kind of setup that really, yeah, can point people to the website for anything that they're missing at the show. Like, you can still get this, it's just going to take an extra couple of days.
Right.
And it would be so much less stress on me logistically, just, you know, organizing, counting, and bringing that many designs to a show, especially after no practice in 18 mm-hmm. months, it was stressful.
Yeah, it was much more stressful to organize this show than other shows for that reason. But, yeah, I'd love to try that out.
Drake was Quirkylicious, was also talking about this as well, because he has recently upgraded his paper to a thicker cardstock, like a really nice, you know, has some heft to it. And the first thing he immediately noticed was, okay, well, now I can't bring nearly as much as I used to. It weighs more.
Yes.
Like, even he flies, like, exclusively Air Canada. So he gets 3 checked 70-pound bags.
Right.
And he fills those things up. And he has, I don't know how many designs he's up to, but it's
a lot.
It's around the 100 mark. It's a lot of designs. He has a ton of artwork, and he's constantly producing
making
new artwork. And so that same deal. So what do you do? Do you print in the city that you're going to? Do you ship everything ahead? Or do you limit the portfolio to like a more sustainable selection? But then what do you cut out?
And I don't think this is a one-size-fits-all answer.
No,
either.
Definitely not.
You know, it's just one of those things that we're pontificating about right now because we continue to make new work. And because we do this sort of full-time, we produce work at a sort of a more astounding rate than to someone who is doing it part-time. So if you're a person who's like, well, why do they have this problem? I don't have this problem. Don't. It's fine.
You'll run into it eventually. It took years to get to
this problem. Yeah, we're 10 years and now we're at this problem.
And then it's like what you're talking about before, and I ran into that recently too, where I reprinted a whole bunch of old work that I hadn't brought out in years, and suddenly people were excited about it again. And this was all work that had been retired because it seemed like nobody wanted it anymore. A couple years later, I dusted off, and now suddenly it's exciting again.
Yeah,
so there's that whole factor of like, you know... shelving the old work and bringing it out every so often.
Yeah. I have this piece that I did. It's a mock cover for a character from the world of the Midnight City graphic novels. So it's a character of the Atlas, and it's like as if it's a comic cover that existed. It says the Invincible Atlas, and behind him it's this bank of TVs with all like explosions and chaos going on. And he's standing there in his socks, and he has this little word bubble that says, can I at least put my boots on before I have to save the world? I had so much fun making this piece. For a year before the event, as we call it here, happened, not a single person interested in this piece, but I kept bringing it because I liked it. And whenever it would show up in my portfolio, I'd be like, ah, that one was fun to do. Okay, I'm glad I brought it. No one would ever buy it. No one would even look at it twice. This year, though, the mood of that piece really struck a lot of people. And so the work that you make, it's like what you're saying, that is old or from your past, maybe just hasn't hit, it's found its moment yet. Just like a novel can find its own time many years later, so can a piece of artwork do the same thing. So don't abandon everything all the way. But sometimes it's okay to just put it on a shelf for a while.
That's interesting. I wonder how much the event changed people's outlook on life and how much that's going to affect what art they like and what pieces they like.
It certainly changed wide format stuff for me. Like, people were like, well, I spent 2 years staring at my office wall wishing I'd had a poster or a piece of art I liked there.
Yeah, me too. I agree. I have that feeling right now. Yeah. I'm looking at you guys have all this stuff all over the studio here, and I'm like, damn it.
We're going to organize a little better for tonight's open house also.
Yes.
So
cool. I want to give a shout out before we forget to a young man named Ian Russell. He was at the end of your row. And I just was like, you know when you get, and this is a great thing that has happened at a convention when you get kind of stuck behind a group of people and there's like a little bit of congestion. You're just kind of stuck in front of a table and you have to wait for people to move to that was happening, right? And I was just kind of awkwardly sitting there. And it wasn't him. It was his friend who was also at the table is, you know, I don't know, also, you know, trying to grab attention. And he just sold me on this movie and told me about the movie and how good it was. And it was shot here in Winnipeg and so exciting and interested in it. And then just started talking about all this stuff. And then he you know, introduced me to Ian. And so the movie is called, well, I've got two movies I bought for $15 on DVD. The Killing Death, which is a great name for anything, and then Cybernetic Showdown is the name of the other one.
Oh, nice.
So these are two movies. They're low budget, locally made films. But the beauty of it is,
did Ian write these?
Yes, he has written books.
So full disclosure, you maybe not don't know this. Ian and I went to entrepreneurship together.
Did I buy his book as well?
Yeah, you did.
Oh man,
too.
I had no idea you even knew him.
Yeah, so we in our misspent youth did a program at Red River about like.
Yeah, I know. I know the entrepreneurship program.
It's like
program.
The entrepreneurship program, which at that time was like how to do your books, how to do the accounting, how to find price points, how to build a market.
I could use that for my podcast business right now.
Right? Yeah, it was a great experience. And so we've sort of been tangentially in each other's orbits as a result of that. Every time we see each other, we kind of check in a little bit. So I'm so glad that he hooked both of you without any of your prior knowledge of my connection.
The beauty of it is, and he explained this all to me, is that he obviously had no budget for the movie. So he made a low budget as you know, cost effective as he could and quick and dirty filmmaking kind of stuff. And I have not had a chance to watch it yet. But he's written a novel version of the story that has everything you need to make a big budget movie of it, because it's all in the book. When you don't have to worry about budget when you're writing prose, right? Yes. You can just make whatever you want. So that, I think, is brilliant. Just a brilliant way to market a book and or a movie, right? To do that. So I love that he did that. And he was great. Again, he was great at pitching it, just so passionate about it. And he's made a couple other films here as well.
So I have to get him on the show.
Yeah, we will get him on the show for sure. Yeah, I will. I'll reach out to him. Because, that's just, I love seeing people like that. And I'm sure there are all kinds of people like that at these shows. I just happened to be stuck in front of his booth.
Right.
That's just so weird that I just kind of happened to get stuck there.
Now, you picked up the novel. What was the novel that you grabbed? It had gold foil on the cover.
I don't think it did.
Didn't it? Am I thinking of something else?
Talk about something. I will grab it. I know exactly where it is.
Okay.
I also bought a copy of Children Shouldn't Use Knives from the At Bay Press table. Mr. Matthew Judry was there. Is that how you say his name?
Judry? I believe so.
Judry? I don't know. Anyway, sorry, Matt. It's a killing death. Okay. And this great book just grabbed my eye. This is why cover design is important, because the font they used for the cover of this looked exactly like a Shel Silverstein book. So it's that black type.
What flavor you're after.
Yes.
Right?
And it just brought me back to that, you know, reading those books as a kid. So I immediately picked it up and bought it because I wanted to support the publisher.
I have a question about font like that.
Yeah.
Because I also use and reuse ancient type treatments from the 30s, 40s, right? I'll have to hand trace them out in order to use them properly because they're not fonts.
Right, yeah, right? Typeface. They're, is that the difference?
And some of them were paste-ups of that era or whatever. So it's been reproduced but never existed as a digital format. So, and Stranger Things, for example, uses a typeface that is 100% the Stephen King 80s, 90s novel typeface.
Very nostalgic.
And it's on purpose, right? How do you feel about this idea of borrowing the authority of a previous work, not just in the content, like I like robots or I like monsters, but in the literal graphic design? How do you feel about all that? What's your thoughts? 2 cents. It clearly works.
I was thinking of, I just saw a video about The Lawnmower Man. I don't know if you're familiar with that story about the movie The Lawnmower Man, about how Stephen King sued them.
What?
Because they were going to call it Stephen King's The Lawnmower Man. Because it was
based off of Stephen King?
Not based on it. No? In title only. There's very, very little to do with the short story that Stephen King. And at first, I think he did sell them the rights to that story, but they did not make that movie.
Right.
And he sued them and was able and won. And so they had to take his name off of it. That's a problem. I don't know. That's what I thought of when you said that.
That's what you thought of. Yeah. So is it when you're borrowing the authority of a previous work? And I bring this up, too, because I use propaganda imagery as the basis for, like, in the Midnight City, in my World War Weird set of prints, it's presupposes that instead of humans being their own worst enemy in the 20s and then also in the 40s, alien invaders were their worst enemies. But I used the graphic design sense of both those eras in the propaganda posters of that era and that time.
Profiting off war.
In a way, I'm borrowing the authority of a previously established design language. And people say, I don't like war. I do like aliens. I like that you're poking fun of it a little bit. But would they even recognize it if not for the blood, sweat, and tears of the literal event that occurred?
God, isn't that the same as like when we do like comparable titles? Like this is like Zelda meets District 9. Like,
isn't that the same?
It's a connection that the person has already.
Right.
That's a real problem in my game!
Okay, so as long as we're segueing into poor uses of connections people have already. You've had a problem with much of your artwork being turned into NFTs without your permission recently, right? Is there anything wrong with that then? They've just used an image which evokes a certain emotion that they hope people will connect to.
I think that's different. That's somebody. So recently NFT sites have been kind of going all over the place. And all you need to do to post an NFT is right-click an image and post it, and then you can sell it and potentially make money off of it. So they're just stealing other people's work and pretending it's theirs.
Yeah.
Directly stealing. Direct, yeah. 100% pretending.
So they don't put your name on it at all?
Oh, no, no. They just...
Like, I don't, again, I still don't, I know that you guys talked about it in a previous episode, I still don't really understand what NFTs are.
I am kind of...
And the author of Hockey Apocalypse put it this way on his Twitter account recently. It's a proof of purchase. So technically speaking, your grocery bill is your NFT
yeah, okay.
of the groceries that you bought. No one can have those groceries again.
No.
Right? They're gone.
No, it's like you have
the value disappears once I eat them.
That's right. Once
no,
you
no,
took.
No. It's Gregory's groceries. You bought the receipt for his groceries.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
that's
I'm gonna
the groceries.
Yeah, well, we missed the
oh,
step.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
you paid $500 for that receipt.
But I don't get the actual groceries?
You don't get the actual groceries.
I don't want
you never
that.
Never owned the actual
What's
groceries.
What's the point?
Well, see our previous episodes about NFTs for how
know.
We really
I've
feel
seen
about
the
this.
Previous, I edited that episode and still don't understand.
I know.
Okay.
It's, yeah.
Anyway, so there's no mention of your name. That's the thing. If they had just taken an image and with your name on it or whatever and said... I thought they were adding cryptocurrency to it.
It is. You pay
okay, so
in cryptocurrency.
Here was the
That's
thing I
the
was
value
confused
part
about.
Of it then.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
But he doesn't get any of that.
So say
no,
I actually, I take, let's say my noodle shop print and I make that an NFT, right? But then you take that image and you mirror it. You make it an NFT. You take that image, you make it black and white. You make it an NFT. I mm-hmm. crop it slightly. I make it a second NFT. Like, mm-hmm.
I zoom
those,
in and make an NFT.
Right?
There's
got
to
yeah.
be a method in this system. I understand what they're getting at there, but there's got to be a way to confirm that it's your NFT and not somebody else's NFT from the same
I don't
image.
Think
there
any
is not because
well,
you
can put a blue check mark beside your name on Twitter.
What?
You know how they verify people
oh,
on Twitter?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Like they can verify people,
but you're forgetting a tried and true historical event called the snake oil salesman.
Ah, yes.
Right, who would push their rickety cart from town to town, and they would lift up their ointments or their salves, and they would expound on the virtues of these things, and their real purpose was to take your money and leave.
So exactly
that is NFTs.
That description. I had two gentlemen come up and want to discuss NFTs at the Comic-Con, and I didn't know how I really felt about that. Did you have anybody come and,
I did.
And want to do
yeah.
NFTs
they
with you?
They said, how do you feel about NFTs? And I said, how do you feel about snake oil salesmen?
Okay.
My literal reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then their next question was, what is a snake oil salesman? Because they were under 25.
Now, Sorry. Jonathan Sorry. Ball of Writing the Wrong Way is quick to point out that, as with all collectibles, it's a good idea to be the one selling them. And probably a bad idea to be the one collecting them, right? Because your value is connected to your emotional investment in that object, you're likely to pay more for a collectible object than you would otherwise. When we did the Imagination Manifesto, I did alternate covers for all of the books, but I did not charge extra for them, and I made them equivalent counts, so there's the same number of every cover. And when people would say, oh, I'd like to buy all of them, I would say, you shouldn't. There's no extra value. There's no...
Yeah, it's like when they did those covers in the 90s. They used to do that all the time. They probably still do for Spider-Man and stuff like that.
Alternate
that?
Covers is a big money maker.
It's, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But and I did that. I did buy those back in the day. But, yeah, there was no real value.
I always got annoyed because I assumed that was the artist that did the interiors as well. So I was always kind of disappointed when I bought like a Scotty Young cover and then inside was...
Sometimes it was. Sometimes it was
right.
still
Some,
like...
Oh
it was
yeah,
a McFarlane,
sometimes.
Like, I think of this McFarlane Spider-Man cover that came in the silver and the
right.
gold, mm. the different versions, the foil print.
Now I brought these Ace Doubleday flip over books because I love the graphic design and the stories inside them, and they remind me of being in grade 5, reading The Saliva Tree and everyone around me saying, what are you doing? This is book is not allowed at school. So nostalgia meant when I was at this old bookseller's table at the convention, I paid more than those were worth because they're hard
yes.
to find. To me, I'm sure other people would be like, oh my God, I have a box of those in my garage. I can't believe you paid that much money for them. The point here is that if you are collecting things, collect them because you love it and you want to have it and you want to share the story of it and you want to share it with others and you want to lend it to people so they feel that joy. If you're slabbing it in plastic to put it in a safe for value, go on the stock market.
Yeah,
you'll have a
thing.
Much better enjoyment of this buy and sell, your money is imaginary moment. And I say this as the son of a stockbroker. You can have a lot more fun doing it that way than getting into the collectible market in the hopes of making money.
One thing I want to say is that speaking of collectibles, it was great to see outside vendors here. There were some outside people who are not from Winnipeg selling movies and shirts and stuff like that, merchandise, which was great to see. Mm-hmm. But there were also quite a few local vendors as well, like probably the gentleman you're speaking of. I think it was the gentleman from Red River Books, possibly.
No, he was a guy I didn't know before.
Oh, okay. I don't know. But maybe there was a gentleman there who was selling stuff, and I often seen him set up in the E-Trim at the college, because there were sometimes people will set up there to sell stuff to students.
We should do that.
And yes, you should. And actually, that's a great idea.
We've done that at
I'm going to cut that out of the podcast so nobody else has that idea.
That's right. We've done it at U of M. It works quite well. Yeah. Cut this all out of the podcast.
It's our secret. Precious.
Anyway, but when I was there, I saw, and what my collecting thing has been lately is the DVDs, right? We've talked about this. And maybe we'll dedicate an entire episode to like what I've learned about collecting DVDs in the last few months. He had a great selection of DVDs, like stuff that I would love to have if I was at the point of my collection that I'd found like everything else that I wanted to find. Because right now I'm in the stage of my collecting where I'm still kind of starting. It's still pretty new. I'm still going to like thrift stores and yard sales where I am finding some nice gems and some nice things. Thrift stores are a bit, you see a lot of Lord of the Rings, a lot of Matrix. I think we covered this. But like the things like he had like a Newhart season on box on DVD.
Right.
Like great, great old TV shows, old movies, special editions movies, all kinds of great things. And yeah, he was charging more for them. He's $15, $20 each because even though they're 20 years old or more, because that is more valuable.
And so, there's that nostalgic value.
And if I was going to spend more money, if I was at a different stage in my collection, I probably would have bought some of those.
So here's the rule we sort of have come to since the event in our house for buying DVDs. If we've looked it up on the streaming services and it's not there and it is now available, but it used to be there and we want to watch it again and it is now available to rent for $5.99 on Apple TV or whatever, it's better just to order the DVD because if I've already watched it and I'm looking to watch it again, I will guaranteed want to watch it another time. So I might as well just own it. And then I'm not at the mercy of any other person.
Yeah, that's certainly actually the thing. The movie that started this all for me was Terminator 2, because I could not find my son had seen the first Terminator kind of on his own, just discovered it and watched it, and that was on. I don't remember if it was Prime or whatever streaming service it was. And then I'm like, oh, have you seen the second one? It's even better. Mm-hmm. And he had not seen the second one, and I could not find it anywhere.
I'm so thrilled. Did you come with me for that?
Yeah,
the Terminator 2 had a re-release with the new sound mix in theaters a couple of years back. And
that would have been awesome. Mm-hmm.
And my goodness, did that movie hold up? And all they did was adjust the sound a little bit. So that
But seeing it in a theater.
Holy
I didn't see it in the theater first time around.
I want a theater that runs the best of 80s action and horror films.
Yes.
Yep.
All right. I'll pay full movie prices to see those movies on the big screen.
Yeah. It
seems like an easy, like, seems like a... No brainer, right? Like, why aren't you playing the classics? Like, you know,
Kids these days.
Kids these days.
And their phones and their streaming services and their
Christmas carolers. I hate Christmas carolers. Screeching voice, no blue snippers.
Even though I've forgotten their name and I don't have my phone handy to look them up, my neighbor at the show, one of my,
the coloring book girl?
Coloring books? There was a shared table with an author that had three novels that they had finished and self-published. And then their cousin or friend, I'm not sure, they were splitting the table because they were new to shows.
Always split your table when you're starting.
Yeah, had a coloring book, black and white, hundreds of pages filled with original characters.
Super thick paper like that could hold markers like you wouldn't believe.
I bought all the offerings from my neighbors. And I was so pleased when I asked each of them to tell me about their product. Even though I said, is this your first show? Yeah, we haven't done shows really. Tell me about your book. That's usually a train wreck. Not in this case. They knew their product well. They knew how to talk about it succinctly. And they explained what they were doing. And then both of them kind of nervously like, so I hope you like it. You know, they didn't just go on and on. They just left me alone to check it out. And At first, it was sort of like a good neighbor thing. Like, oh, I'll check it out. Maybe I'll buy something just to, like, you know, be a good neighbor. Then I was like, oh, wow. I'm actually interested in both of these things, and I think I'll bring them home. One of them we've just ruined because my son is in the room. I was going to add into their Christmas presents that big anime coloring book. But he's looking at me now.
Guess you're getting that a little bit early.
Yeah, wishing he'd paid more attention.
And don't feel bad about forgetting their names, because at an event like that, your brain is like Swiss cheese when you're like meeting so many people, and it's just in and out. So I don't feel bad. Like I see a lot of people. Even now, I'm going walking around the con, and I'm seeing people that who have tabled at FanQuest, and I don't know their actual first name, because they are emailed to me as always their brand or their artist, whatever name they go by or whatever. And so I feel kind of bad sometimes. But honestly, at events like that, you're just meeting so many people and talking to so many people, your brain is not retaining that information.
There's two tricks. Gregory has the one where if he's doing something with this person to follow up, he immediately writes the email in the conversation. Like, okay, we're going to talk about this book. Okay, I'm going to write you an email right now just saying, let's continue this conversation. I'm going to send it right now.
Oh, that's a good tip.
So we have that email chain has started.
And even one better, I will sometimes say, I will write the body of the email, and then I'll say, send this email to yourself.
Right.
Right? And pass them my phone so that then it's the connection is made. Now, I don't do that cold. Like, usually we've had a good conversation. Mm-hmm. It seems obvious that we would like to connect. We're going to do the card exchange, and I'll skip the card exchange step and say, listen, we might as well just follow up directly in a real way right now.
You're kind of like getting their number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The card is a nice way if you're not sure if a person is someone you would like to have follow up. You can give them the card. I have two tiers of cards. One is the Super Pulp Science card, which has all of our links to our socials and all that kind of stuff if they look up this podcast. And one is a card that I have that is a square cut card, blank on the back. It has my email and my phone number, but then space
phone
on it.
Phone number?
Ooh. It has space on it for me to write what we talked about and do a little doodle pertaining to that I'll give directly to that person. And I find it's better if it's a real important follow-up to offer that direct line of communication first rather than ask for it, right? And if they immediately are reciprocating, then leaping into the email conversation is easy, right? Oh, well, then let's just send it. But if they're like, thank you very much, maybe they don't want you to have their personal information, and that is 100% okay, right? So you just don't want to be too pushy about it.
Cool. I thought of one last thing to end the episode with. My mom was in Walmart the other day and came upon a Stranger Things calendar for 2022, and my artwork is December.
Mr. December.
That's right. I'm going to look for one.
I'm in a Walmart calendar.
Oh,
Stranger
I'm getting
Things.
One for sure. That's right. I saw you post
so
about that.
In my misspent youth, our indie horror film, Agrisomnia, was picked up by a distributor and then also appeared in Walmart.
And that's a big deal.
Yeah, so it was on the shelf. One of the actors, Tyr Trubiak, sent photos to everyone who worked on the film, because somebody had, I guess the way the alphabet worked, we were between two Disney movies, and ours was like this super independent psychological like horror feature.
In between Bambi.
Yeah,
and
like whatever, wherever A was at that time. So yeah, it is weird, right? Because you don't want to be like, yay, Walmart, but the idea that you touched this huge section of the public with your work is, I think, pretty great. And hundreds of us submitted work to that art book.
Yeah, so the way that worked, Printed in Blood does themed art books, Stranger Things, The Thing, Aliens,
Ghostbusters.
Halloween. And they have licenses from that parent company. And for Stranger Things, that was Netflix. And so when Gregory and I both did the Stranger Things book, they sent out a little thing saying Netflix might contact you and pay you money so they can use your artwork as well.
For other ancillary products.
But you have no idea what that is.
Or when it'll happen, and then you get paid royalties after.
Okay, because I was going to say, are they going to check with you? But I guess that would take too long.
And no, see, no, they check with the licensor. Licensor. Yeah, that's right. Licensee? I forget how that works.
Whatever.
The person who paid for the license is the one that manages that. So they'll receive that money, and then that money is then due to the people who they have existing contracts with. Right, which is why sometimes when a big company puts something on a mug or a T-shirt, an artist for a short time will feel like, oh no, I've been robbed, right? And then it turns out their agent will send them, a check
in the mail,
6 months later.
So this is kind of the same thing that when I originally worked for Ant-Man and Wasp, they get a whole bunch of artists to do official Ant-Man and Wasp art, and that goes into a catalog. because the people doing the movie cannot deal with like one-on-one conversations with all these companies who are making the mugs and making the calendars. It's just too much, right? So they put together this catalog of approved high-res artwork, and then you get to – those companies can just basically cherry-pick what
they pay for
want.
The license, and then they pick the part they want to use and put this, it on whatever a product they want.
This bodes well for next year, though, because in about 6 months, you're going to receive a check for whatever they made from this calendar.
Theoretically, yeah.
Theoretically. And then and Stranger Things is finally coming back next year. I mean, how long has it been? The kids are like in their 20s
and
by
now. And if they don't, we might have a new agent to sick on them.
Well, anyway, yeah. So that'll make the more popular, and people will be buying that kind of stuff more, so you'll probably have more sales of the calendar. As well, so
they still have. We were allowed to make 200 prints of that artwork, so I still have some of
those.
Yeah,
I still have a few left too. But that one, I'm nodding my head as if you can see me.
it was kind of Christmassy themed. It had the
yes, that was got Christmas lights.
Yes,
on the
Christmas
wall.
Lights, which is why I think it was like they wanted it for December.
Yeah.
So next time, Gregory, make
it Christmas
season. Make it fall themed or spring themed.
Oh, I have no complaints about the work I did on that one because they used it at New York Comic Con when they were promoting the book. It was the people presenting the book at New York Comic Con. They had a staff pick page where the staff would put their favorite, and it kept flipping. They kept flipping it to that one to display it. And so what I want to say about this, even though it sounds like just like an ego trip, it's really amazing because when I was a little kid, I would look through like the Gremlins calendar. And I would look through art and production stills, and I would then take out my sketchbook, and I would draw on this little foolscap paper, and I would just doodle like a fiend this stuff, never in my life imagining that it would come full circle to where the work that I do inspires or is inspired by something that I love, which then I get to participate in, which then might inspire someone else to start that whole circle again. So I guarantee you this Christmas – or I guess it'll be next Christmas, someone will finally turn to the December calendar, Justin. They will look at that picture that you did, and it will inspire them to make work, and that whole cycle will start again. And I think that's a great place to stop this episode. This has been Super Pulp Science. I'm Gregory Kamichek, encouraging you to join the fight and make comics.